Hear now the word of the Lord. Let mutual love continue. Do not neglect to show hospitality to strangers, for by doing that, some have entertained angels without even knowing it. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. My father-in-law, Larry, is probably one of my favorite people. His kids no longer think he is funny, with his quiet one-liners that he throws into conversation from time to time. But I, however, am about 6 years going strong of thinking he is hilarious. In honor of Larry and many other dads in our lives today, I'd like to share Jimmy Fallon's most recent hashtag all call, dad quotes. Late night show comedian Jimmy Fallon invited folks to get on Twitter and tell their favorite quotes from a dad in their life and tag it by hashtagging dad quotes. This is what ensued on Twitter. My sister once asked my dad what he thought of her dating someone named Hansel. All he said back was, "I bet you regret all that." When I was younger, I was playing softball and told my dad that I was scared I would get hit. He responded, "It's okay, we have insurance." My dad used to ask us to turn up the TV by saying, "Make those people talk louder." My dad adamantly stated, Essential oils are used to French fry onion rings, wings, and French fries. All other oils are not essential." "Mom, who should we put as the emergency contact for the cruise?" "Dad, the Coast Guard?" Once my dad went to the grocery store and the cashier asked if you want milk in the bag. And my dad said, "Just leave it in the carton, please." As a teenager, I shouted at my dad, "It's not your job to embarrass me." "I know." And then he smiled and said, "It's one of the perks." Laughter. It's an icebreaker. It's a way to connect people. It's a reaction or a result, a consequence of inconsistencies that most times for us end up being funny. Laughter can arise from being tickled or hearing a humorous joke or even thinking a humorous thought to yourself. When one is laughing, it can show your emotions, joy, relief, happiness. However, laughter involves also a bit of risk because it's always dependent on age, gender, education, language, culture, as to whether a person will actually think that it's funny in a given situation. Comedians take a huge risk when they do stand-up comedy because they dance a fine line of funny and offensive. Laughter can happen when one is sad as well, or doubting or feeling hopeless. Laughter can happen as a relief of energy. Like last week when Patrick was helping my husband hoist a couch through my window. Now that was funny. And absurd. My husband Will is an avid reader of the Sunday funnies. My favorite one is Garfield. Why, you ask? Because I can't help but read every single comment that cat makes sarcastically. My favorite kind of humor is the ironic kind, which in many ways makes the Bible very interesting to me. Humor and comic relief, where one would least expect it, is all over the biblical narrative. Our story today is one of laughter as irony, laughter as an expression of Sarah's doubt of God's unpredictable nature. Our passage this morning picks up mid-narrative in Genesis. Now, I've rather felt close to Abraham and Sarah lately because I've identified with this whole God telling you to go, so you go and leave your family and your home thing. Sarah and Abram come to us shortly after the flood narrative and the Tower of Babel in Genesis. They were called Sarai and Abraham at the time, and they found their home in Haran, until, that is, God started stirring up something unpredictable. God comes to Abram and gives the first of three divine speeches, where a patriarch is given travel directions and a promise to get on his way. God tells Abram to leave his home, his country, his kindred, his father's house, to the land that God will show him. He also learns that God will make of him a great nation with descendants that are blessed, even in his old age. This is the beginning of God's forming of the nation Israel, written with deep history and the error in the ancient Near East. Before we get to chapter 18, God reiterates the promise to Abraham and Sarah, telling them their new names, but also the promise of descendants, a son to carry forth this divine blessing. God seals this covenant with the mark of circumcision. One can only hope to be as faithful as Abraham. God says he does. Good old faithful Abraham. Even to the point of circumcision at the ripe old age of 90. Sarah, on the other hand, is more relatable, in my opinion. She's faithful, yes, but also likes to take matters into her own hands. Does that sound familiar for some of you? In chapter 15, she forces Hagar, Abraham, to make him a son, Ishmael, because she knew that she was barren and God had promised them a lineage was the only way that she could conceive in her mind how this could happen. Surely in my old age, as barren as I am, I cannot give Abraham the promise that God gives. Our passage this morning starts in the heat of the day, where Abraham is healing under an oak tree and he sees in the distance three strangers traveling through. In the middle of the day, this is so rare to see people traveling in the desert. And Abraham immediately rushes to them. This is an oddity because travel was dangerous in the ancient Near East at that time. They were taking a risk. Lands were occupied by strangers, and people had very little public inns or tents. Yet these strangers, they found themselves lucky in the hands of Abraham, who quickly did what ancient Near Eastern hospitality norms expected him to do. He washed their feet, gave them rest and shelter, fed them cakes, 6.5 pounds of flour worth of cakes, to be exact. Abraham exceeded the terms of the hospitality code. And as these men are settling in, they ask for Sarah by name, which is rare because travelers are supposed to be strangers, right? This affirms our hunch that these three travelers could possibly be an encounter with the divine Yahweh. Abraham answers the men when they ask for Sarah. She's out preparing food in the tent. Sarah hears her name and listens closely, for God's promise is once again reiterated. This time next year, she will bear Abraham a son. This is impossible. There's no way that I could... Why did you laugh, Sarah? Sarah is caught red-handed on her eavesdropping. She laughs when God tells her the plans. Not the kind of hashtag dad quotes or tickling me, tell that joke again kind of way, but in an ironic way, Sarah laughs, because this is simply absurd. Wouldn't you laugh? I mean, this whole situation is something as absurd as a young teenage mother giving birth to God in a barn. All signs in the world tell us that this simply cannot biologically happen. And then comes my favorite verse in today's passage. Is anything too wonderful for the Lord? Sarah was laughing at the inconsistencies of God's plans and her logic, that God simply can't do all things, especially the impossible ones, that God is the predictable type of God, the one we can understand. This barrenness of Sarah in more ways than one left her feeling like there was no way that God's promises could be fulfilled through her. Yet where we see barriers and ending points, where we see dead ends, God sees something new. God sees possibility. God sees a chance to do God's work. Have you ever found yourself laughing Sarah's laugh at God? Perhaps God is tugging your heart to a new field of study, a new job, a new home, a different chapter for your family, one you didn't expect. Maybe God is at work in leading you to serve in a new way in your community or in your church. I and many others will be headed to New Mexico next week, a place where God will show us and surprise us with much more than we have even imagined. Sarah's laughter is important because it highlights the nature of our unpredictable God who will go to high lengths using us, God's earthen vessels, to fulfill the promises of God. Through the laughter of Sarah, we are invited to worship a God who is unpredictable, a God who fills us with awe and keeps us on our toes, a God whose nature challenges us to be open, to open ourselves to what God might be doing in us, where God is sending us, what God has in store. One of my favorite preachers and former pastor of Fourth Presbyterian Church in Chicago, John Buchanan, says it best. Faith in this God is not predictable. Faith is an openness to the startling, amazing, surprising grace of God coming at us, to us, in the most unlikely and unexpected of ways. Contrary to conventional wisdom, faith is not about knowing everything there is to know about God. It's knowing that there's plenty about God that we don't know. Faith is not certainty. Faith is acknowledging that God will not be reduced to the limits of human understanding. God will be God, and there will always be surprises. I worried a bit when I was writing my sermon this week because I think we can read this passage and we can immediately jump to some if-thens that can be hurtful for us. Some if-thens that put even more boxes around God than our laughter. Because we could walk away today saying, if we are just hospitable to people, then God will show us what we need to know. Or if God helped a geriatric woman have a child, surely if I pray hard enough, God will grant us the desires of our hearts. When we read just the verse, nothing is too wonderful for God, we can easily fall into the trap of Sarah, the trap of organizing our lives to trick God into giving us what makes sense to us. God doesn't and shouldn't make sense to us. What I know is this. We worship a God who provides us with a promise, a firm foundation for us to stand upon, and a spirit that is ever within us. God will make a way where there is no way, Martin Luther King Jr. used to say. God will make a way through the sea. God will bring freedom out of oppression, justice out of injustice, life out of death. It's not that God will do everything that we ask, give us whatever we think we want, as the prosperity gospel preachers promise. It is that God is God, and God will do God's will, and it will be a surprise to us all when it happens. We worship a God who is unpredictable, who is glorified in the things that are hard to understand, like death, who loved those society deemed unlovable, who called 12 people out of their homes to follow a man who says he's the Messiah. We worship a God who is at most at work on the fringes where we are dreadfully uncomfortable, where all the statistics point to God not being there. Serving God should be terrifying because that means God is doing something amazing there. My hope and prayer for this church is that you will join me in opening yourself to see how God might be at work, doing the unthinkable in the world with you as part of the story. Let's keep on laughing at God. Perhaps it'll keep us on our toes. For nothing is impossible with God. Gracious and loving and unpredictable God, the beginning of your nation, Israel, was based on a word that means he laughs. God, we come to you in our laughter, the joyous kind and the terrified kind. We rest ourselves in your promises, knowing that even though it might not make sense or be logical, you have the firm foundation in which we are upon, that you know all and that you are working among us and leading us to do your service. Be with us as we go from this place, that we might take with us that holy laughter that throws us to your feet in humbleness. In your name we pray.